Come on, neighbors, let's get wise.
So, the plaster is falling, the paint is peeling, the plumbing is leaking, the heat and hot water keep cutting off, the elevator keeps breaking down, and the landlord won't return your calls, but the rent keeps going up and up and up?
Find out what you can do about it. Tune in to Housing Notebook, Mondays at 8 p.m.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI New York. The time is 7 o'clock. Time once again for Off the Hook. Greetings, everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Manuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening. Joined tonight by Mike.
Hi.
Dot Rhett.
Hey, hello.
Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
Voltaire.
Hi there.
Gus.
Oh, hi.
And Bernie S. down in Philadelphia.
Greetings from Philadelphia.
And we come to you every Wednesday at this time from 7 to 8 p.m. talking about issues of technology and privacy and all sorts of other fun, delightful things like that. Mike, I believe you had an announcement you wanted to kick things off with. Go ahead.
Yes, this weekend in Cambridge, Massachusetts, is the Free Software Foundation's annual conference. It's called Libre Planet, and if you're in the area, you should go. The website is fsf.org/conference.
Okay. So usually we have the announcements at the end, but today we decided to have them at the beginning just to mix it up a little bit and try something different. Interesting story. I believe, Bernie, you posted this one. I love the headline. Robots chase aliens through subterranean tubes. Now,
I couldn't resist slightly rephrasing the headline.
Right, so you wrote that headline, then. That's not how it actually showed up.
No. This is a story about immigration and customs enforcement officials apparently using remote-controlled robots. These are apparently not autonomous robots to explore tunnels, mm-hmm. drainage tubes that are around the border areas between Mexico and the United States to look for people who would try to smuggle themselves and other things from Mexico to the U.S. through these tunnels. And they run these robots through there, which have video cameras, which apparently have wireless TV transmitters on them. And they were they spotted some undocumented individuals and they were trying to follow them through the tunnels with these robots unsuccessfully. The people got away. But, you know, it's just we're talking about aliens, we're talking about robots, we're talking about tunnels. I mean, it just was too tempting not to, to phrase this as robots chase aliens through subterranean tubes.
Well, I mean, technically it's true. That's exactly what's going on. But it is kind of science fiction-y and kind of scary. And I guess it sort of ties into a bunch of scary science fiction-y type things that we have on tap this week. How about this one? This is a real headline, came from CNN. Star Wars scientists create laser gun to kill mosquitoes. Yeah. Here it is. Scientists in the U.S. are developing a laser gun that could kill millions of mosquitoes in minutes. The laser, which has been dubbed a weapon of mosquito destruction, fires at mosquitoes once it detects the audio frequency created by the beating of its wings. Yeah, I'm not making this up. The laser beam then destroys the mosquito, burning it on the spot. Developed by some of the astrophysicists who seemed to have a lot of free time on their hands, involved in what was known as the Star Wars anti-missile programs during the Cold War. They just like to blow up things. The project is meant to prevent the spread of malaria. See, it's got good. It's got good to it.
So they determined it to be kind of impossible to, like, win a nuclear war. Instead, they're focusing on mosquitoes.
Yeah, the second enemy, mosquitoes.
It's kind of like the anti-Star Wars, where in the Star Wars films, the first one is good and then the sequels are bad. But in this one, in Star Wars weapon system, the original one didn't work, and now the sequel's not going to work either.
Yeah, I guess so. That's just going to happen. And hopefully they won't have a bunch of really mediocre ones afterwards that are even worse. But anyway, malaria, in case you don't know, it's a life-threatening, it's not a country, it's a life-threatening disease caused by parasites that are transmitted to people from the bites of female mosquitoes. It's particularly prevalent in tropical and subtropical regions of the world. Kills an African child every 30 seconds, according to the World Health Organization. There are an estimated 300 million acute cases of malaria each year globally, resulting in more than 1 million deaths. So therefore, you know, this laser gun seems like a really nice thing. One of the scientists involved says there is no such thing as a good mosquito. There's nothing that feeds exclusively on them. No one would miss mosquitoes. There's something about that. There's something about that blanket statement that bothers me. Nobody would miss mosquitoes.
You have to hope that the laser is not going to miss mosquitoes in this particular
yes.
case. But, like, I mean, isn't it more efficient and easier to kill mosquito larvae? They move a lot slower, from my understanding. So, like, why are we not working on killing mosquito larvae?
Well, they don't beat their wings, so you can't hear them. And the
so
laser
you can't
gun.
Do cool things with lasers to them?
I don't think
lasers
so. Not yet. I'm sure
water.
They're working on it. Yeah, they're working on developing. Yes, Rob.
So malaria is bad for you, I understand that, but how good for you is breathing millions of vaporized mosquito corpses?
Yeah, you know, they don't address that issue either. So, in any case, this guy adds, the laser is able to distinguish between mosquitoes that go after people and those that aren't dangerous. What remains to be seen is how precise we can get. This guy adds that other insects would not be affected by the laser's beam, in case anyone's concerned about that. The lasers could be mounted on lamppost-type poles and put around the circumference of villages to create a kind of fence against mosquitoes. Yeah.
Mosquito-proof fence.
This research is commissioned by Intellectual Ventures. Does anybody know who Intellectual Ventures is? A Washington, U.S.-based company, Washington State-based company, that was founded by Nathan Myhrvold, a former Microsoft Corporation executive. His previous boss, Bill Gates, funded the research and asked Myhrvold, to look into the new ways of combating malaria. And boy, did he find one.
So he worked for Microsoft. He's familiar with bugs.
Yeah, very good.
Sorry.
Yes. Now, continuing with the scary science fiction-y vein of tonight's show, how about this? A Finnish computer programmer who lost one of his fingers in a motorcycle accident has made himself a prosthetic replacement with a USB drive attached. I'm not going to make it through this story. Jerry Jalava uses the 2 gigabyte memory stick accessed by peeling back the nail to store photos, movies, and programs. The finger is not permanently attached to his hand, so it can be easily left plugged into a computer when in use, or when not in use, depending on how you look at it. Mr. Jalava says he is already thinking about upgrading the finger to include more storage and wireless technology. I'm planning to use another, planning to use another prosthetic as a shell for the next version, which will have removable fingertip and RFID tag. He wrote on his blog, which you can read at protoblogger.net. Of course, none of that is spelled the way it sounds. protoblogr.net. Half of Mr. Jalava's left ring finger had to be amputated last summer after he crashed into a deer while riding his motorbike near Helsinki. Best thing that ever happened to him, I guess. He says he was inspired to create the unique storage device when doctors treating him joked that he should have a USB finger drive after finding out he was a software developer. I think those guys should get a piece of whatever profits he makes out of this ridiculous...
I don't think there's any profits, Emmanuel.
When he starts developing this for all the people that chop off their fingers in hopes of, like, becoming one with their computers, I think there'll be profits to be had by many.
I hope
Emmanuel.
Not.
Emmanuel?
Yes, go ahead, Bernie.
It just brings a whole new definition to the term digital memory.
Okay, you know, obviously you guys have had these lines you've been waiting to use for quite some time, and I'm glad there's an opportunity for that. But it's time for us to move into our next story. Filmmaker turns into iBorg with camera in eye socket. Oh, my God.
Did you say iBorg?
He's Borg?
No, they said iBorg. This is from the...
But you read it.
So yeah. Did it was in the Cube?
This is from the London Times, I believe. A filmmaker is putting a mini video camera in his prosthetic eye to record a documentary highlighting the issues of privacy and a surveillance society. You know, I couldn't think of a better use for a prosthetic eye than to, you know, I mean...
Did he lose his eye by hitting a deer as well?
I don't think so. Rob Spence says he will secretly record people for his iBorg project using a tiny camera, battery, and wireless transmitter hidden inside his false eye. He's not telling us which one it is. He is going through the final stages of fitting the camera with which he will be able to record the same things that he sees with his good eye, his muscles around the empty socket moving the camera eyeball just like his real one. Onlookers will not be able to tell the difference between the two eyes from a casual glance, as his prosthetic eye has the same hazel green iris and the camera shoots through a special transparent pupil. It will be a way of experiencing life through my eyes. Mr. Spence is hoping to make a broadcast deal for his documentary. He's already run into controversy over his plans. He said people were happy to have surveillance cameras recording what they did and were willing to divulge personal details online, even their location. But the idea that a cyborg could be recording them made them very uncomfortable. Would you be uncomfortable having some guy talking to you, recording everything that you say and do, and you don't even know he's doing it?
I think some people told him he might not ever be able to get a girlfriend again.
Yeah, I guess that's another aspect to all this. But wow, in 1 week, we're talking about laser guns for mosquitoes, USB fingers, and cyborgs recording you when they talk to you. I'm afraid to come in next week.
I think it's a pretty good idea, but I'm just a little nervous that he's already shelling out the ideas and without even like implementing the movie.
Well, he's looking for distribution first, and if he gets distribution, he can fund his film. Smart, actually. Yeah. But what's a good idea about this? What's a good idea? Tell me the good idea part.
The good idea is that he makes a statement about, if he does it well, he can make a statement about privacy and stuff.
Well, yeah, it's true. And how people with prosthetic eyes are violating our privacy. I guess he could make that statement. Yes, Bernie.
Well, he could be hired by any one of various intelligence agencies as someone who could be searched for cameras and not have them. Frankly, I think this guy probably was involved with beta testing this this mosquito laser thing, but Microsoft is funding. That's probably how he lost his eye in the first place.
Yes, Gus.
Actually, Microsoft did have something they were working on some years back, probably 2005 or something, called My Life Bits, in which they were planning to make it possible to record a tremendous amount of your life all the time, and they had somebody sort of pilot it by wearing a camera all the time. And he did have some sort of security issues, as I recall. But, my question is sort of like, why and is it, I mean, like, I guess what really gets me is I'm sort of thinking as a videographer now, and I'm just like, do we really have good camera stabilization? Is it going to be watchable, or is it going to be, like, bobbing up and down all the time? Is that not going to be interesting?
Talk about point-of-view shots, you know? And I guess we won't have a handheld shot so much. It'll be a head-held shot.
And I think our heads are pretty stable, relatively.
Well, speak for yourself, but, yeah. Go ahead, Rob.
It must be interesting for a filmmaker, though. I mean, do we have to wait till he loses an ear for him to make talkies, or...?
Okay, you know, I've had it with this. This is enough. The point of all this is to warn people that there's all kinds of scary things down the pike. Yes, Dot Red.
I just want to know if everyone who meets him has to sign a waiver.
Yeah, you know, all these things we have to worry about that we never had to worry about before. It's a good lead-in now to this story because people didn't realize this either. But Facebook, yes, my favorite site, Facebook. Apparently, if you're suing somebody, Facebook might be usable against you in court, especially the things you say on it. Chatting with friends on social networking sites could have legal implications and turn Facebook users into their own worst enemies. In a precedent-setting decision, a Toronto judge has ordered a man suing over injuries from a car accident to answer questions about content on his Facebook page that is off-limits to the public. Lawyers for Janice Roman, the defendant in the lawsuit, believes information posted on John Leduc's private Facebook site, quote-unquote private Facebook site, normally accessible only to his approved friends, all 6,000 or so of them, may be relevant to his claim an accident in Lindsay in 2004 lessened his enjoyment of life. And I guess what they're trying to do is prove that he actually is enjoying life by looking at his pictures and maybe his various comments about, oh, how great life is, or whatever else people say on Facebook that might be used against him in court. If you are alleging that as a result of an accident, you have not been able to enjoy life the same way, and there was a photo taken after the accident showing you skiing or exercising, that could be relevant, the civil litigation and intellectual property lawyers said. What's on Facebook might also matter in insurance cases or family law cases where there's a dispute over custody. Photos, for example, could reveal something about a parent's living conditions. What do you think about that, Gus? I see you nodding your head. So.
Did we also cover a story? I believe there was a case recently where somebody was served papers over Facebook as well. Are we covering that story this week at all?
Is this the same story?
It was up on Slashdot. I think it's a different story. I feel like it was in Australia, but I could be wrong.
Uh-huh.
But that was something where they said...
Well, somebody was suing Facebook.
New Zealand?
Yeah. Someone was suing Facebook because people said bad things about her. Was that the case?
No.
There's a lot of lawsuits going on.
Yeah, well, and it's sort of, you know, we're exploring how we're going to use social networking technology for things like this. I think sort of it was decided that Facebook is only sometimes an appropriate channel for doing something like that. I assume it's if you can't serve people papers some other way as well.
Yes, Rob.
The one major glaring thing I see about this is that many bloggers do not blog under oath. It's not illegal to lie on the internet. I could blog about any number of things that I didn't really do, but if I have to sit in a court of law and give a deposition, then I'll have to be honest. But
right.
If they're bringing up my Facebook or my blog or my whatever as incontrovertible proof that I did something.
So you're saying that you might lie on your Facebook page about enjoying life. In actuality, you're not enjoying life, but they're going to use that against you as if you were swearing that you are enjoying life.
Yes, indeed. I mean, I don't use Facebook, but I'm sure I've
blogged. And you are enjoying life if you're not using Facebook.
I'm sure I've blogged sounding like I had a better day than I did once or twice. So,
what's the precedent for lying in other forms of print, like magazines, for example?
No one's ever told us not to lie. I hope that's not a problem.
I'm assuming there must be precedent about stuff like that in terms of using it for, actually evidence in court.
Mm-hmm. That right.
I'm concerned about the privacy implications because if you have something up on a website that you have private only for your friends, then that does ask some questions about that.
Mm-hmm. Bernie, any input on this?
Well, any information you put up can be subpoenaed either civilly or by law enforcement agencies, so it's not a big deal. This is really just an extension of what's been going on for decades with the private investigators in, for instance, personal injury lawsuits, where the harmed party is spied upon by the party being sued to find out whether that person is really harmed or not. You follow them around enough days with a video camera, covertly, and when you see them running around the jogging and things like that when he says he's had trouble walking. And that stuff is used in court. So it all comes to court of law to discredit someone. So it all comes down to credibility in court of law. If you lie on your blog, they're going to use that in court. It's like, well, are you lying on – does that mean you only lie online? I mean, are you really an honest person? The whole point is to impugn the credibility of the witness, and that's what this is about.
Now, Kevin has arrived from the street.
Hello.
Welcome. How are you doing? You have something on this?
Not particularly. I'm very flustered right now as I was rushing to get here, so I missed most of the story.
Well, sorry to hear that, but no doubt it'll catch up to you at some point, especially if you use Facebook. Here's something else that will catch up to you if you're not careful. Texting and talking while driving. Soon be off limits for teens in Georgia. I know it's rather a narrow group of people, but if you're a teenager in Georgia, don't text and talk. No, wait. Don't text. Hold on a second. Don't text and drive. Don't talk and drive. Don't do either. Don't drive. Yeah, just stop that. The House voted 138-34 Thursday to ban drivers under 18 from texting and making calls on their cell phones while they are driving. The measure, which now goes to the Senate, threatens to slap those who don't hang up with fines and even a suspended license. That's a really awkward sentence. Georgia could join at least 17 other states and the District of Columbia that have passed cell phone restrictions for teen drivers. Here in New York, nobody can talk and drive at the same time on cell phones. I don't know about texting. Can we text?
There's no law.
I hear Bernie crying for you. Yes.
I don't think this law says you can do it if it's hands-free. I think this is telling teens in Georgia, if this law is enacted, the teens in Georgia will not be able to use a cell phone, period.
But how in God's name do you text hands-free?
Well, I'm talking about, you said talking.
Well, they're specifically pointing to texting more than they're talking, than pointing to talking, I think. But, yes, you're right. I think this goes beyond the hands-free exception that we have here in New York.
That seems kind of silly to me because there have been studies done that show that talking on a phone is just about as distracting as talking to someone in the passenger seat of your car.
You know, it really depends. It really depends on the person's driving ability. For instance, I find it a lot harder to text while I'm driving than to talk. And people seem to think that it's more polite to text while driving than talk while driving. And people will text me instead of call me. I wish they would call instead because it's, you're typing. You have to, like, figure out what you're doing. And obviously it's safer not to do either. But again, it depends on your skill level, and it also depends on traffic conditions. If you're stuck in a traffic jam, the only time I ever got a ticket for using my cell phone while I was driving was when we were stopped on the expressway because of an accident, and I was telling somebody I was going to be late. That's when I got a ticket, because that's when the cop could see me using my cell phone. I wasn't moving at all. So, you know, there's all kinds of variables here. I don't necessarily think we need a law every time there's a possible hazard in order to tell people what to do. And the danger in that is that people think everything is safe unless there's a law specifically prohibiting that activity. So that's what I'm worried about here. In this particular case, though, they're saying that in Georgia, teenagers will not be allowed to do that. And I guess that makes sense to a degree. Just the law thing kind of worries me. It's not Kevin.
But isn't an adult just as capable as running something over while
texting?
Of
course, yeah. In fact, more
so
capable sometimes.
I don't see the purpose of this
bill. It's just because I guess teenagers are newer to driving and perhaps drive more recklessly. I'm not saying that, but some people do. Insurance companies certainly say that. They charge more. I guess,
Gus. Well, they're also the ones with more familiarity with the technology, and they're more likely to be texting to begin with. So they're probably trying to nip this practice in the bud.
Yes, but they'll probably be able to text better than, say, your grandmother.
Exactly.
Yeah, can you imagine your grandmother? I'm not picking on your grandmother, but I'm just saying, imagine her trying to text while driving and never having texted before. That could be a real catastrophe. Yes, not Rhett. Apologies to her, by the way. Go ahead.
I don't want to see her grandmother driving.
Well, I don't know.
My grandma's on Facebook, yo.
Personally, you have against her grandmother. I didn't mean to bring that up at all. Okay, but that's, I saw somebody texting, actually, no, talking on a bicycle the other day with no hands on Avenue B, going through a red light. What do you think about that? And there's no law against
living
that.
Living dangerously.
David Byrne has been picked up for bicycle accidents in the past couple months.
Sorry?
David Byrne. He's been in bicycle wrecks in the past couple months, apparently.
Uh-huh.
One of them, at least.
That's supposed to make me feel better.
I don't know.
Okay. Yes, Mike.
I was going to say, it's also not clear to me that people on their 18th birthday suddenly gain the ability to text message and drive at the same time. It seems a very odd, it's a very traditional thing to do in the law, but it doesn't make any sense.
But everything is defined by age in our country, you know that. And when you turn 18, all kinds of things change. Okay, so we have some additional features to get to. Shall we just dive into this right away? I suppose so. Yes, once again, it's time for .gov of the week. And this week, actually, it's sort of a mini feature because we don't have a full-fledged site to focus on, just an update of last week and sort of a mini thing for this week as well. Last week, as you recall, or you may recall, we focused on a Y2K page for children on our favorite site, yeah, FEMA.gov, FEMA.gov, FEMA standing for Federal Emergency Management Agency. And we were wondering what that scary creature was on the page. So it looked like some kind of crazy insect type thing. I'm showing it to people. and we got a bunch of listeners wrote in telling us that, in fact, this was identified on another part of the site. In fact, I'm going to hand this out. This is you can color in the face yourself. Yeah. Go ahead, Mike.
Do you have some crayons?
I don't have crayons. No. I can't bring everything.
Then what good are you?
Yeah.
Really?
You know what? I'm also going to hand out. There's three versions of this. Gus, I'm going to give you the second part. All right, not Kevin. I'm going to give you the third part. But you got to read it with rhythm. All right. I'm going to read the first part. All right. This is a poem called "Disaster Connection: Kids to Kids." And it talks about that creature, which is known as the Y2K. I guess it's a play on Y2K. It's spelled Y2Kie. Am I pronouncing it right? Y2K, maybe?
I thought it was just going to be called the Y2K bug.
Yeah.
Well, all right, fine. But, it's not spelled that way. K-I-E is key, not K. But if you want to call it the Y2K, then we'll do that. Okay, the Y2K. Here we go. This is written by Janine Patrick. My mommy and daddy have been talking all year. Look, I said it was for kids, all right, so. My mommy and daddy have been talking all year about something strange and unfamiliar they fear. They don't tell me. They use their grown-up voices. They talk about preparing and precaution and choices. Whatever it is, it's not meant for me, but still I get scared when they say the Y2... See, right there, the Y2K. It doesn't rhyme if I say Y2K. So it's Y2K. Whatever it is, it's not meant for me, but still I get scared when they say the Y2K.
It doesn't make any sense at all.
I'm sorry, I didn't write it. It's for kids. The Y2 key, I think, is a monster. It's huge. And it's very hard to read this, too, the way they have it written out. It's as smart as a fox, and it's meaner than Scrooge. It gets into your house, and it steals things at night. It's got long-reaching claws, and it causes a fright. Good thing for us, it hasn't come round till now, but for some reason, it's creeping up somehow. Yes, Voltaire?
Is the Y2 key a hacker?
I think maybe that might be the case. I saw my parents stuff the pantry with cans of food, so maybe Y2 key won't eat me if I try to be good? Good doesn't rhyme with food. It's spelled...
How do we know it's pronounced Y2 key now? Because now they've proven that they can't rhyme.
Yeah, apparently not. They have blankets and flashlights and candles galore. You never know what might happen at the store. I'm beginning to think this Y2 key is everywhere, but I don't tell my parents because they're already scared. That's kind of lame, too. All right, your turn.
I'm beginning to see it on the news, too. I try hard to listen, but I don't have a clue. I can gather when it's coming, at the end of this year. As winter approaches, I tremble with fear. It must be a snowman, an abominable big lug. But for some reason, though, I hear it's a bug. I have no idea now how a bug got so scary. Yes, they're creepy, but they shouldn't make adults wary. They've started a countdown. It's coming, they say. Grown-ups cower in every country, every day. Businessmen, even, when they're stalked by this giant, whimper and promise to be Y2K compliant. I just, you know, as somebody who's sort of dabbled in education, mm-hmm. this just doesn't seem like it's going to even reach kids at all.
Let's just not, the person who wrote this might be sick, so we don't want to, mock it too much.
Oh.
But it's bravo for trying.
Well, my grandma's fair game.
Yeah, that's true, but I think she can probably take it better. Yes.
Is it Y2K, I think? That was a long time ago, so they're old enough for us to mock them now.
That's true. If they wrote it then, you're right. Okay, now, Kevin, the grand finale of this.
Are you ready, they say, and I tremble with fear, because I'm too little and the end is too near. This giant bug will crush me with its pinching claws. So why are my parents worried about their computer flaws? It was all too much to take, too much at this age. If you're not afraid of what happened, just turn the page. All of a sudden, it was cheerful. On December 31st, excitement was everywhere. I was ready to burst. All my neighbors gathered in the town square and popped the champagne and fireworks in the air. You better believe I kept looking over my shoulder. I was surprised the Y2K wasn't bolder. Sometimes after midnight into my bed I crept. I knew in my heart the Y2K also slept. As my parents left me, I thought I could hear, "Why won't we have to worry about this for another 100 years? I imagined that maybe the Y2K was my friend. I'm almost sad he won't come around again.
Now, that doesn't make any sense to me. Why would this kid be sad that this fearsome insect or whatever isn't coming around again? Something doesn't add up. Yes.
Why do they still have this online?
Well, if you want to find it online, we're not making this up. www.fema.gov, FEMA.gov, /kids/, okay, here's how you spell it, WYTOOKIE1.htm. Does your page say one? Does it say something?
Two.
Okay, so that makes sense. 1, 2, 3. We read page after page.
The coloring book is 4.
The coloring book is 4. You know, I didn't try going to 5. And here's the second part. The second part of our feature here is something from the CIA. Yes, this is the grownup.gov site. And there's actually a page about their clandestine service. Yes, I'm not kidding. A page about the clandestine service of the CIA. Sorry, what?
Do they have a non-clandestine, like the public part of the CIA?
Well, you'll have to go and explore their site to see all about the other things. But I'm kind of surprised that the clandestine service has its own webpage. And it's defined this way. The threats facing the United States today are more complex and challenging than ever before, and the collection of foreign intelligence has never been more vital to our nation's security. Some of the broad issues we face, such as the threat of war and regional instability, are perennial challenges. Complex targets such as terrorism and proliferation pose increasingly critical threats. In this environment, the National Clandestine Service, known as NCS, operates as the clandestine arm of the CIA and serves as the national authority for the coordination, deconfliction. That's the first time in my life I've ever said that word.
Has
anyone in this room ever used the word deconfliction? You know,
all the time.
As if from magic, Nick Farr has arrived from Washington, D.C., and Nick, come up and tell us when you've ever used that word. This is amazing how you just sort of appeared when I said that, too.
Actually, it was in a report that I was doing when I was actually working for a consulting firm that was working for the FBI at the time.
Wow. So this is like a governmental thing, isn't
it? Yeah, actually, there's three parts to the CIA. There's the clandestine service, there's the research service, and I forget what the third part is.
Yeah, you're supposed to forget what the third part is, I'll bet.
I'll bet, yeah.
Can you use the word? Use the word in a sentence to speak it the proper way?
I just got here, and I'm illegally parked. I have to go.
All right, just say the word, then. Just say the word.
Deconflicted.
Deconflicted. Oh, a different use of it. Okay. Do you need a quarter for your
No, I got quarters.
Okay, good. Welcome, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
And you're with a bunch of people. Do you want to introduce them? Go ahead, introduce these people. We're in the middle of talking about the CIA, but we'll finish that after you introduce your friends here. How you doing?
Hi, my name is Sasha from Germany.
From Germany?
From the Phone Operations Center, from the events, the CE3 events.
You're the guys that make everybody communicate amongst each other.
Yeah.
So well.
We try to.
And are you here to show us how to do that? Because we need to learn how to communicate.
No, we had not the time yet.
Okay.
We just arrived.
It'll take a while to train us. Yes.
Look what we got for a phone.
Look at that phone. Clearly
you can do better than that.
Don't hold Bernie S. like that. Bernie, are you okay? See, he's stunned. Bernie, don't shake people on the phone. It's very bad for them.
I'm sorry.
Still recovering.
All right, you're right? All right.
Yeah, I'm recovering.
Do you want to introduce the other people, or will they be clandestine? All right.
Hi, I'm Jens, and I'm just tagging along on a visit to New York.
And you're from Germany, too?
Yes.
Wow, how about that? What are the odds that the third person is also from Germany? We'll find out.
I'm the third person. My name is Axel. I'm from Germany, too.
Wow.
And, I'm Jens' brother.
Great. So you guys are in New York, the first time for you?
First timer, yeah.
Awesome. Well, here's a radio station.
Great.
We have a bunch of those in the city as well. All right, guys, make sure your car doesn't get towed, and maybe we'll talk to you a little bit later. Let me finish about the CIA here. Okay, in the National Clandestine Service, it's a national authority for coordination, deconfliction, and evaluation of clandestine human intelligence operations across the intelligence community. The NCS supports our country's security and foreign policy interests by conducting clandestine activities to collect information that is not obtainable through other means. The NCS also conducts counterintelligence and special activities as authorized by the president. I just think it's amazing how they're talking about, clandestine, according to Merriam-Webster, I even printed out the definition here, it's marked by, held in, or conducted with secrecy. And here's a web page saying, yes, this is what we do. We do secret things we don't tell anybody about, and here's our web page.
But they use made-up words. I still don't know what they do.
Yeah.
apparently they do whatever the president tells them. Great.
Yeah, yeah. But at least they tell us that on a web page now. And that's our .gov of the Week feature for this week. If you have suggestions as to .gov websites we can go to that are fun and interesting, write to us, oth@2600.com. We'd love to hear from you and love to see what kinds of sites you're able to come up with as well. Over the last few weeks, we've learned so much about how the government operates. It's kind of frightening. All right. Bernie, what do you think of that? Well, you weren't being shaken, that is.
No, I'm over that, being shaken. But, you know, I think I ran into these fine Germans last night. Were they walking around
You ran into some Germans last night? What do you mean?
In Philadelphia. I was walking around viewing some...
Were you guys
Patrick's
in Philadelphia last night?
No,
you must have run into some other Germans in Philadelphia.
I ran into a bunch of other fine Germans last night, and they said they're going to New York the following morning. So I thought this might be the same group of Germans.
No,
they're everywhere.
No, not every German heading to New York are Germans that we know. So those were different ones. Okay, we have some other stories as well. Do you hear the story about this tennis player who was told that their rackets might be a prohibited hand luggage item on an airplane? The EU list is a secret list showed that rackets are not specifically banned from the cabin. However, it contains a catch-all prohibition on any blunt instrument capable of causing injury. And an overeager airport official might still argue that rackets fall into that category. I maintain fists can fall into that category. It's a blunt object. You can hit somebody pretty good over the head. And if you ban people with hands and you only have people with USB devices and feet, yes, Gus?
Feet are a lethal weapon.
And some people headbutt, so maybe certain heads shouldn't be allowed on board. Rob?
Is there really any blunt object that could not be used to inflict injury by someone sufficiently angry?
No, I don't think so. I think there's all kinds of, there's an unlimited number of blunt objects.
But the way that was phrased was interesting. Did they say it's not because they might be used as, but because an overzealous security guard might see them as being used as and then slow down the whole process? Was that what they're saying?
Well, this all got started because this tenant. Yes, Mike.
So blunt objects are forbidden. Right. Sharp objects also forbidden,
of course. I assume so.
Is there any other class of object? Liquids are forbidden.
There's imaginary objects. Imaginary objects. There's invisible objects.
Small.
Sarcastic objects. The point is, this tennis player was thrown off a flight because security staff believed that his rackets posed a terrorist threat. And he basically took it to court and won. And basically, the judges ruled the unpublished European Union Register of Hand Luggage restrictions could not be enforced because passengers had no way of knowing exactly what was prohibited. It sounds kind of familiar. It sounds like the kinds of things that we're told, you know, there's no law that we can point to, but it's forbidden. Go ahead, Robert.
Under that kind of definition...
I'm sorry, you wrote down. Go ahead.
Under that kind of definition, even a book could be constituted as not
certain
allowed.
Books, most definitely, yes.
Yeah, like the 2600 book.
I mean, somebody was reading an article on how to hack Passport, which was not the passports that people use. It's, you know, a computer kind of passport. And somebody was upset at that. They thought that he was some kind of terrorist hacker. So, yeah, there's all kinds of things like that.
I keep wondering how cause it seems to me. Does anybody else have data points on in practice how TSA is not enforcing stuff? Because for me, the first couple times I went through with my Swiss Army knife, which is, you know, not longer than my finger, they stopped me. But the last five times, like, it's just gone through. It wasn't a big problem at all.
Where'd you put it?
It was in my backpack on my keys.
And it was wasn't checked in?
No, it wasn't checked in.
Wow.
Yeah.
I know people have had their Swiss Army knives confiscated. I believe, Bernie, you had your Swiss Army knife confiscated when we went to see Obama on the train, right?
I did, but I've gone through TSA many times boarding international flights. Of course, it was in my Altoids tin, but still, they didn't look in there.
Uh-huh. Yeah, lots of times they don't look in the Altoids tins. We're not trying to give tips to, you know, terrorists or anything like that, but just it's a point of fact. Many times they don't even look inside those things. All right.
With the pocket knife in the backpack, it might have been covered up on the X-ray by all the keys that it was attached to, maybe.
Is it that easy?
I've seen that actually happen.
They caught it that way before. They've caught it before when it was on my keyring. Like, it's always on my keyring.
Maybe, but you said only once, so.
Hmm.
Okay. A couple times. I had to cry and be like, my dad gave this to me and he's very sick. And, it worked.
Boy.
It worked.
Okay, here's our favorite topic here. A 64-year-old man will spend 6.5 years in jail for downloading hundreds of images of child pornography. Yes, that's right. Ralph Close of New Bern, Connecticut, was sentenced in U.S. District Court. Authorities say he pleaded guilty to receiving child porn back in September. He was busted after he downloaded the pictures from a website monitored by Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Not quite sure how that has to do with immigration or customs, except for the customs of our country, which are kind of weird. They go into some of the sordid details of what the poses were and what kinds of people were participating in them. And after he finishes his 6.5 years, he'll have 5 more years of supervised release, and keep in mind the guy's 64 years old. You know, it's incredible. This is a website. Some guy just goes to a website that's being monitored. Why didn't they just shut down the website or do whatever else they do to forbidden subject matter? Instead, you just send somebody a link to this site. Are they going to get visited now? Is it that easy?
Entrapment.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, maybe the guy is up to no good, but... this is something that we brought up weeks ago, where just having images, this isn't even about having images, it's about accessing the website now. I got to say, it's very different from the crime itself. Am I alone on this? Is anybody else?
I concur.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Bernie. What?
You're not alone.
I'm not alone, yes. I don't know alone, but in this room.
So possessing a picture is not the same as acting as if those are in the picture, but
mm-hmm.
You know, whatever. If you have a picture of somebody pretending to kill someone... or even killing someone. Just possessing that picture is not the same as killing someone.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, to me, I think murder is a pretty serious crime, and violence is a really horrible thing that should be focused on a lot more. And I think the embarrassment of just having his name publicized is enough punishment right there, unless he was up to something else, in which case he should be charged with that. Yes, Rob?
I'm just wondering, like, anyone can be sent to any website for any reason. You type mm-hmm. something wrong, you click a link that, you know, you shouldn't have. So just accessing the website, is that in itself the crime, or is it keeping the images after you've seen the website and realized, hey, this isn't what I was looking for.
And sometimes
the
images get stored in your computer regardless, in your
cache
temp
files,
folder.
You get
things
like that. So.
I mean, every time we get Rickrolled, do you think if we got prosecuted for that, you know, it could happen.
Also, how are the powers that be monitoring this website? Is it their website?
That's another great question. And so many times, I believe, Bernie, you brought this up, where the people that are actually looking for these people, trying to track them down, they're usually the ones that are saving more child porn than anybody. Is that right?
Well, people tend to gravitate to things they like. So it would not surprise me. In fact, I talked to somebody who knew someone who worked in customs who said that there's a lot of shady people that work at various government law enforcement agencies that enforce child pornography laws because they like to look at this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and they can legally if they're doing that, I suppose.
Sure. What better job to have if you're that kind of a perverted person and sick and like to look at that kind of stuff? What better job to have is one that you can look at it all day and night with impunity? So I think we need to watch the watchers somehow.
One of the interesting things is that in the commercial world, I know of at least one major photo sharing site that has somebody on staff whose job it is to look for child pornography among flagged images, and that person's job mandates that they have psychological counseling the entire time.
So before or after?
possibly altogether, you know, but I think it's sort of interesting, you know, do the government officials who are looking for this also have to go through psychological counseling?
Mm-hmm.
Might be a good idea.
Not right.
To what Bernie said about them gravitating towards this kind of job, then by legislating against this, what they're doing is creating an industry for people that they're trying to attack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it does
seem that way. Okay, enough about that. Let's see. This person writes in, Michael writes in, I've been listening to it for some time now. I always miss the pledge drive since I listen to the show in batches, often long after they've aired. What is the best way for me to contribute? I was hoping to get one of those swanky off-the-hook T-shirts. Well, Michael, the only way to get the T-shirts is to pledge while we are on the air doing our particular radio show. The reason for that is if we had the things available all the time, we'd go bankrupt because we'd be giving away thousands and thousands of them. But if you really care about WBAI, and you should because you're listening to this radio station now or whenever it is you are listening to us, you can contribute any time. Does anybody like to give the information on how to contribute? Go ahead, Mike.
WBAI.org.
That's right, WBAI.org. And there's all kinds of information there on how you can pledge. And there are all kinds of other items you can get, not off-the-hook items, but other items of fabulous things, BAI things, other premiums. The important thing, though, is to support the station. So go to WBAI.org, pledge a whole lot, keep us going, because in these economic times, we're being hit pretty hard. We're being hit really hard. Go ahead.
Even if you don't listen to the show live, you could call between 7 and 8 on Wednesday when the drive is going, and you'll still be able to get the shirt anyway.
That's right. 7 and 8 p.m. Eastern time.
Eastern.
Wherever you are. We have more mail, oth@2600.com is our email address. Let's take some phone calls in a couple of minutes, 212-209-2900. Dear Off the Hook, in regards to the March 12th show, I believe you mean the March 11th show, right? Because today's the 18th, so we didn't have... All right.
Maybe the person's in a different time zone, so it's already the 12th.
Yeah, but we label the shows exactly to avoid this kind of confusion. In regards to last week's show, your question as to why Virgin Mobile and other prepaid mobile services are getting bent out of shape for the bulk purchases of phones to be unlocked after selling their phones for such low prices, well, they're making their money off the airtime. If you look at the cost per minute, the rates are rather expensive. The airtime costs, combined with their limited value-added services, such as WAP access, etc., is where they get the most income. Customer service reps are encouraged to upsell these features. I hope this provided some perspective on why they complained. Signed, TJ. And TJ, yes, we know this, and we know why they complained, and, you know, we have every right to complain. What we have a problem with is the fact that they seem to have legal rights to prevent people from doing things that make them complain, such as selling the phones. I think if you own something, you can sell it for whatever you feel like selling it for. If somebody wants to buy it, more power to them. It's a free market society.
Yeah, a bad business plan should not be legally enforceable. They should just take the hit and move on because it's obviously not working in the way they want it to.
Somebody tell the RIAA that.
Working on it. Here's another letter, this from somebody within the system. In regards to the caller you talked to on the show who was concerned about being double billed by Verizon for making changes on her account, I have an explanation. While I'm in no position to speak for Verizon, I do work for AT&T, and our methods are pretty much identical. Cell phone bills these days are usually charged in advance. This means when you get your bill in February, you're paying for services you will use in March. When you make changes on your account, there are three ways that could affect the bill: backdating, future dating, and mid-cycle changes. Future dating a change makes the bill nice and neat, but you have to wait for it to take effect, and mid-cycle changes cause nasty prorated charges, which is a simple concept, but would take a large pamphlet to fully explain. For the sake of example, we'll use changing your text messaging plan from a $5 package to a $15 package, and we're backdating it. The changes are backdated to the beginning of the bill cycle. What you'll see on the next bill is a credit for the $5 package you paid last month. Since you paid in advance already but changed to a different package, you get a refund. Then you'll see a $15 charge for the package you used in its place. Okay, now we're caught up with what you would have paid last month. Then you'll see the other $15 charge to cover your usage next month. Let's put this in simpler terms. I have a basket of oranges delivered to my house every month. One day I decide I no longer want oranges, I want watermelons. Oh boy. I call the delivery man and tell him about the change I want to make. He punches you square in the face. Well, he's got to carry them.
Watermelons, yeah.
Yeah. When the delivery truck arrives next month, I give them back the oranges I didn't want, and I receive the watermelon I wanted instead.
What kind of delivery service is going to take back month-old oranges?
Yeah, you noticed that, but I noticed that he only mentioned watermelon singular. Only one watermelon he's getting, so that's interesting. I also get the watermelon that was being delivered according to schedule. Flimsy analogies aside, that's how it works. In short, the lady was not getting double charged. She just didn't understand her bill. They're confusing, I know. I have to explain this 11 billion times a day to people with varying degrees of mathematical proficiency, and sometimes I get confused. Most of the fault is the bill's non-user-friendly formatting. Nobody knows what all the crap on there says. It might as well be 200 lines of PC load letter with a price tag on the end. Anyway, if you have any other questions about cell phone bills or customer service, I would be glad to answer what I can. I will be listening. Signed, Skaz, and thanks very much for listening and for that very helpful letter, and it's great to know that our BI listeners are connected in all sorts of different ways.
Do they look for opportunities to hire as many accountants as possible? It's like,
That's probably a reason why they do it that way.
I don't know. This seems just totally out of the way, and people wonder why these companies are running out of money these days.
All right, 212-209-2900. Let's get a couple more phone calls on the line, and we'll go directly to the phones. This is a letter from our friend Stuart over in Tokyo. Dear Off the Hook, I was wondering whether this application of technology actually crosses the moral line when downloading copyrighted media from the Internet. Using an application which currently runs on a Google Android phone, it allows you to scan a barcode on the back of a DVD in a store and start a download of that DVD on your home PC.
That's
awesome. Who said that's awesome? Not right. You said that's awesome. And
no, I didn't. Don't point that at me.
Gus is silently cheering in the background. All right, I guess the moral implications that are pretty clear to you. The current implementation seems to require a few manual steps, but it is conceivable that the whole process could be automated further. The net effect is almost no different to taking the DVD from the store without paying for it, effectively robbing DVD retail stores of their last source of income, the impulse buy. Hold on. All the technology has been around for some time now and is not limited to Google Android phones, but I've never seen this amalgamation of the combination of the pieces. It just seems like one of those ideas which, now out of the box, can't be unthought and will surely spawn imitations and variants that we have never seen before. Will the next new crime be stealing barcodes? Again, Stuart in Tokyo, thank you very much. Voltaire first.
I don't think it's anywhere near taking it, like stealing it from the store, because somebody that comes after this customer might as well just buy it.
If they have another Google Android phone, and you know, if it's still there, fine, but if nobody ever buys it.
Yeah, but how many people have Google Android? How many people use BitTorrent in the first place? You still have to have a BitTorrent.
How many people in this room use BitTorrent?
On their phone.
Well, okay, it's the matter of time before.
No, it's being hooked up to the desktop.
It doesn't
almost
use it
everybody
on their
raised
phone.
Their hands, but go ahead.
Speaking about impulse buys, I'm surprised that no company has tried actually using this in a capitalist model where you scan the barcode and they'll just mail it to you after you automatically pay.
That's interesting. Yeah, they got something there.
They could have made a business model out of this, but instead
they tried to. It was called the QCAT, right? I mean, it came out.
Oh boy, what a wretched piece of technology that was.
It didn't go well. I mean, I've got one actually. It's kind of a fun little thing for if you are trying to put stuff up on half.com or whatever. But
yeah.
We weren't ready for
it. We weren't nearly as connected then as we are now.
No. So now it would be a very good thing.
But the QCAT was pretty bulky. It was pretty big and clumsy.
It's about the size of a Twinkie, and it's shaped like a cat with a little square.
Pretty big Twinkie.
Right, but see, it works better if it's software on a phone as now.
Exactly.
All right, let's develop something, Mike. No? You changed. Okay, let's take some phone calls then. 212-209-2900. And good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yes, I wanted to convey to you a serious problem I've had.
Okay, as long as it's relevant.
It is. It's upstate.
That's what make it relevant, but go ahead.
Pardon? I'll try to condense it if I can. I'm with the V landline company.
Uh-huh.
I've been since the 40s. My father was engineer in 42 years. See, I'm not cutting it down enough. There's somebody tapping my line. I've been jerking with Verizon over and over and over again. Switch to Time Warner, same tones. It's a zero key they hit. It's interactive with whatever conversation I'm doing on my end or on the other end. All the card numbers are out there, Social Security numbers are out there, and it's a nightmare,
so,
and they've been jerking with it for how many years?
You're occasionally hearing the zero tone when you're talking to somebody on the phone?
Yes.
Okay,
but
so
they also do other tones, but they do it. You can tell after 2 years it's interactive.
Right. Well, technically I wouldn't say it's tapping. It's somebody tapping into your line, not somebody tapping your phone, right?
Well, I don't know. I called the FCC. Her opinion was it was a wiretap. She said, let me transfer you to the Federal Trade Commission. Her opinion was it was a wiretap. There's no reason for them to do
that. Well, my opinion is it's some kid with too much time in his hands sitting on a telephone pole, or maybe, do you live in an apartment complex?
No.
Okay, well, at some point, phone lines are extremely insecure. It's very easy to tap into them and simply hook up a butt set or something, and somebody's just having fun at your expense.
I think so. That's what I first thought.
And the FTC is not going to help with that, that's for sure.
No.
Knowing where your phone line goes through and tracking it down that way, this is a tough one because of the nature of phone lines. Rob?
There's also the possibility that there's something the matter with your phone and it's randomly sending tones.
They rewired the entire house, placed the software in a central office, which is a mile and a half down the road, gave me a new pair on the line coming up, dead-ended it in my house, run a new drop line, put a new box outside, inside. And I bought all new phones twice.
Yeah, so I don't think it's the phone. I think that's the most likely explanation. Somebody somewhere along the line is just messing with you. It's likely the person knows you if it is something like this.
That's something I know it makes sense, but I can't figure anybody that would.
Well, yeah, the thing with people doing stupid things, you can never know who's doing it, but somebody out there probably is. Bernie, do you have any ideas on ways to fix this?
Well, you could avoid the whole thing by using a different form of communications. You could use a voice over IP service, which they would not be able to tap into nearly as easily, or use a cell phone. Those are a couple of ideas.
The first one uses a computer, is that correct or not?
Well, not necessarily use a computer. Yeah, use a voice over IP service. There's a lot of them on the market from Verizon offers a service, various cable companies offer
Comcast,
a voice over IP service. There's Comcast, there's Skype, there's a lot of. Do you have broadband internet service at home?
No, I do not.
Okay, well, you would need that.
High-end audio and video, but not computers.
Right. You need a broadband internet connection in your home to use one of these many voice over IP services, many of which are free or very low cost. The other is consider a cell phone plan. Use that, especially nights and weekends, you can usually get for free.
Well,
so that's not going to get tapped by any kid.
No, that's going to get, you know as well as I do that you buy a radio scanner out of Canada, it's opened up for the cellular band. And
not anymore.
Really?
No, nobody
chomp that?
That's especially weird, seeing as how they don't really use those frequencies that much anymore.
Well, the
same frequencies. No more 869 up.
Yeah, the same frequencies. The same frequencies, both in the 800 megahertz and 1900 megahertz band, are used for cellular, but they all use pretty complex digital modulation schemes, which no consumer scanner can demodulate. So you wouldn't have to worry about
that. APCO 25?
Okay.
Exactly. They don't use APCO 25.
All right. Listen, we wish you the best of luck with this, sir, and it's a bad problem to have, but we'll see if we can get some listener feedback on this as well. Keep listening, and hopefully things will work out for you. Thanks for your call. Batred, did you have something to add on this?
I was just wondering if the switched service providers, if, maybe be routed a different way.
Yeah, but still, the phone is still coming through the same copper pair, usually, unless you use a cable, solution.
If it's in the actual, if they're tapping somewhere within the actual building, then they should be able to find it.
If it's really going up that high in the chain that somebody inside the phone company is doing this, but I kind of doubt that for that kind of juvenile behavior. Okay, let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hi.
Hi. What's on your mind?
January a year ago. There were some news reports about Verizon fighting with the government to get paid for wiretaps, which they had arranged through Verizon, but which they hadn't paid the bills for. And so Verizon was threatening to disconnect them. Let me ask you a question. if you were able to go for an entire year without paying your Verizon bill, do you think you were probably tapped?
Interesting question. Anybody want to address this?
No, I don't think so.
We're all too scared, but thanks for scaring us. We needed that. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Good evening.
How you doing? What's on your mind?
I'm here. I live in a private house.
Mm-hmm.
And for the past 20, well, I have this phone line since 1985. But for the past 20 years, I've had the same problem that that gentleman's having. I've changed phones. I've reported to Verizon. I've changed companies.
So you're saying you have the same problem as somebody hitting various touchstone keys?
And you hear them talking to. While I'm talking to people on the line sometimes.
Oh, you hear them talking?
People carry on conversations.
But you hear them talking.
Yeah, but they can't hear me.
They can't hear you. Well, you know, it's if that happens, this used to happen a lot more in the past. It was actually kind of fun. When we were growing up, it was fun to always hear other conversations, even if they couldn't hear you. But from that, you can get a sense as to where they are, maybe, or who they are. Sometimes they give out their phone number or their address, something like that. And that way, at least, you know what you're being connected to. When something like that happens, then you simply report it to the phone company as a crossed line or something like that, and at least there's a record of it.
Yes, they test the lines, everything.
Mm-hmm.
They send men here, and they come in the house, they check outside, and, you know, from my home it goes to the pool.
Right.
From the pool it goes somewhere else. And, you know, but it's a disgusting.
Yeah, oh, definitely. So you might want to also check weather conditions, because I have a landline that whenever it rains, there's a loud hum on it.
It has nothing to do with the weather.
Sorry?
It has nothing to do with the weather.
Okay, you sure about that then?
Yes, positive.
All right.
Thank you for taking my
call. All right, well, good luck with that. I guess cross lines are a bigger problem than I thought they were. Not Kevin, do you have something to add on this?
Sorry. Cordless phone.
Say again?
Or if he's using a cordless phone.
How would a cordless phone make it worse?
If you have two, I mean, theoretically, you have two very similar phones on the same frequency,
mm-hmm.
you could cross.
Yeah. These days, don't most of them have ways of preventing that?
Not always.
Not always. That's true. Especially
yeah, it
if
could
an
be
older
an older one.
That's absolutely true. Okay, folks, we're out of time, but I want to thank everybody. Actually, let me finish by reading a couple of pieces of mail that will lead us to our outro. I'm a longtime listener of Off the Hook, a subscriber to 2600. I want to know, what is the name of the song at the start of Freedom Downtime, the very first one when they were taking Fiber to jail, signed Smitty? Well, Smitty, that song actually comes from the Specials, from the album called Today's Specials. You know what? The title of it escapes me, but if you get that album, you'll easily find it, along with the outro to the... what, Voltaire, are you looking it up? You don't have to go to that much trouble. Okay. And finally, for this last bit, and this leads into our song for this week about telephones. Ever since you started playing a phone-related song at the end of the show, I've been listening for my favorite phone-related song. And because this song fits so well with the theme and title of your show, I'm afraid you must have played it the one week I somehow missed your show. First of all, you never have to miss a show, because you can always listen to them at www.2600.com/offthehook. If you haven't already played it, please consider Your Phone's Off the Hook, But You're Not, by the band X. Keep up the great work. Protozoa from France. And Protozoa, that is what we're going to play this week on our outro. Want to invite everybody else to email us, oth@2600.com. I want to thank everybody for being here tonight and for calling in and participating. We'll see you next week.
Woo! These guys are off the chain. I mean, off the hook. Oh, man, can you believe that? They're going to videotape you through your eyeballs? Shoot lasers? Now, what? The question is, what if the laser should happen to miss the mosquito, and then it hits you in the eyeball, ruining your camera? Oh, boy.